Hi, this is Larry. I'm sitting in for Yada, who's traveling somewhere between the world in Waco, Texas tonight, and I'm on with Kirk and JB. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
Doing good?
Yeah, with broken arm and shoulder and legs, you're doing good, man. That's better than most.
Amazing.
I ain't got any complaints at this point. I'm better than, every time I go to the doctor, they give me better news than I'm hoping for, so.
Terrific.
Well, that's amazing. I'm really glad to hear that. I was worried when I first heard you had a broken leg, broken arm in 14 places, and shattered shoulder. That just, you know, I mean, it just sounded awful. I mean, I my heart went out to you because that's a lot of breaks, pal. Bad breaks.
Yeah, it was no fun.
No doubt about it.
I feel fine now. It's just a matter of letting the bones end.
Mm-hmm.
And then rebuilding all the muscle I've lost.
Yeah, well, we're thrilled you're better. Everybody is.
So I know I can hear it in your voice. You know, you're one of those guys, Kirk, that just, yeah, it's overwhelming. I could. Now,
my understatedness is overwhelming. Yeah.
You aren't hardly kidding. Anyway, we went through a week where a lot of people were you know, hitting me up because they're coming on sort of new and mostly from shattering myths.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to go back and just hit some basics. And what I want to do first is I want to attack Paulos. You know, we have many, 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 many reasons that we know that Paulos was a liar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not the least of which is that what's that, JB?
He tells us he is?
Yeah, he tells us he's demon-possessed. I'm going to get to that in just a second. But not the least of which is that, you know, Yahusha warned his disciples about the guy that was going to come to them. He forewarned them. He said he's so slick he could even fool you. So let's say Shimon was fooled. Well, what difference would it make? He said, you know, I mean, he could even fool you. Now, he didn't fool Shimon, but he couldn't have. And when I say Shimon, that's a name that means he listens. And it was a word that was actually, a name that was actually, of course, in the Sun Goddess book named after Biblia or Biblos. They changed it to Petrus. That was in the Vulgate. And, of course, Petro is in Jordan, and it's a it looks kind of a reddish sand, kind of a carved fortress into a cave, and it's where they stored a lot of idols.
Mm-hmm.
So they take Shimon and they turn him into this hill of idols, basically, by calling him Peter, which is, you know, that's a problem right away, but just so we're aware of that, his real name was Shimon. And I want to start, you know, I mean, we put all this information out. We show where Paul's in direct opposition to the Torah. In P46, the oldest we have Paul calling the Torah pornos, which is, you know, pornography, right? Pornos,
right.
Porn.
Mm-hmm.
We have him saying he wishes that all the people under the Torah were castrated. Whoa, that's lovely. That sure supports the Torah, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. What a lovely guy.
Yeah, just he's right there with the rest of us on the Torah. But I want to, no matter what you put out there, they want to throw up 2 Shimon 3:15. And I'm going to start with this because it's such a beautiful rendition of what was really written. And I'll start right there at the passage, 2 Shimon, called Peter by most people, 3:15. And he says, also this regarding our upright one, Yahweh, steadfast, enduring and constraint, considering forming opinions regarding the process of salvation, in so much as it pertains to this, our esteemed countrymen. Then there's a comma there, and it says, Paulos, through the clever use of philosophy, having been produced by him in writing to you. Now, guess what word it is that gives us this clever use of human philosophy?
Sophia.
Remember, we're talking in the Greek here. It's Sophia. Where we get sophist from. And what was a sophist? And I mean, flat out, they use that word. Sophist. It's like using pornos for porn.
Mm-hmm.
It's a paid teacher or philosopher, and rhetoric in ancient Greece associated in popular thought with moral skepticism and suspicious reasoning. In other words, a person who reasons with clever but fallacious, meaning false, arguments. Wow. So, you know, we're going to have trouble as soon as we look at the actual, at the oldest we have, and that word Sophie is in there. That makes him a liar right away. Makes him a sophist. And you notice that particular passage talked about money involved.
Mm-hmm. And you can't of course we know. I just can't do it for money.
That's right. No, no. And that's what Paul was doing. We're going to prove that here. Shimon Kefish is saying, make every effort to become blameless, learning about finding reconciliation. Now, how do we do that? How do we do that, Kirk? How do we find reconciliation? Yeah, how do we find it?
You have to turn away from things and go towards Yahweh, and he has a prescribed path. And that's the Mark, right? Yeah.
Yes, the seven.
And we can learn from our Torah, obviously. That was part of the program of this walk is to study God's Word. Now, I have a little hang up already on the simple fact that when we're talking in Greek, Greek is a philosophical language. It's a language in the more in your well suited for philosophy, whereas the Hebrew is always concrete. So, I mean, right away you're in a different mindset.
Nonetheless, the word sophist was used there, Sophie. That's a sophist, and that means this is a person using fallacious arguments, and he's getting paid too, by the way.
Yeah, so he's a paid cleric, which we're warned against.
Yeah. And it says, regarding our upright one, Yahweh, so we properly prepare to show a steadfast and enduring and concerning forming opinions regarding the process of salvation, insomuch as Yahweh's approach differs so dramatically from his countryman there, Paulos. You know? So after undermining the veracity of Paul's alleged conversation or conversion experience, the man Yahusha called the Rock is now prepared to provide a life and death contrast between this man and Yahweh. And of course, you know, when he lays it out there, you're trying to be steadfast, you're staying on the path, and that path he's talking about, of course, are the seven Meled Mikra, the looking at the mitzvah, the chukah, the pakudim, looking at these things, and actually acting on the seven Meled Mikra and the seventh day of rest, loving Yahweh's name and using Yahweh's name. Walking out of Babylon, and Babylon was the most religious place on the planet at the time, right?
I mean, right, absolutely.
He says, and even as in all these letters, and I gotta love this. You know, a letter is a letter, but every time this is back in the church days, I gotta go way back, almost 20 years for this now. They would never call Paul's letters just letters; they were called epistles. Like it was some big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a letter.
Yeah, it was considered scripture, too.
Well, in those in those circuses, they sure are. But if I wrote you a letter and I was interjecting my opinions and sending you a letter, how would that be scripture?
It's not.
Yeah, it couldn't be. This is my opinions. But he says,
I've wrote lots of letters in my life. Not one of them is scripture.
Yeah, right. They're not. I don't see any of them at the Smithsonian or you know, anything. I mean, it's just an insane possibility. And as a matter of fact, it's an insane possibility that, but it did happen that Marcion happened to put all Paul's letters in a book and call it a New Testament. By the way, when he did that, and he took Luke, you know, Paul's running buddy and friend and scribe and historian, and put one of his letters in there too, just to bolster Paul's. But Luke wasn't anywhere.
Yeah, a little bit of Acts, I think, too. So that was it. Yeah.
Well, he put them in there, and by the way, he pronounced the Jewish God dead. That's brilliant. So if you believe that one, then you can believe a bunch of letters. What's that?
I said, that takes some guts. They pronounce God dead?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it takes a moron to believe because a man did that. And of course, he was the son of a bishop. He was a wealthy shipbuilder, and all he did was had his prolific copy editors flood the market with Paul's letters and came up with a new religion. I mean, simple as that. That's where his New Testament came from. But Shimon goes on to say, and even as all the letters inside them speak all around and on the other side of this, within which there are some things very difficult to understand, which the uneducated and malleable will misinterpret and distort, turning away. Actually, it says perverse, twist, deriving false meanings, which people will suffer as a result of. That's what it really means. And that's what really happened. And those that pull this up in order to somehow bolster Paulos, that's what they're doing.
The minute you said that, I kind of thought on, you know, Yahweh's already said the Torah is easy to understand for anyone who has an open mind. So it's in total contradiction to the Torah right there. Can you contradict the Torah constantly, as you, I'm sure you're going to prove, as we all know, that and still have anything and be trustworthy? No. So, I mean, he's dead out of the water almost immediately on just about everything he says. But
well, when he called him a sophist, he was calling Paul a liar that was out to get money. I mean, that's what he was saying.
Sure.
You know, I mean, Paul didn't say he spoke with human philosophy. He said he spoke with the authority of the Ruach. Remember, Paul said, I cannot lie. Mm-hmm. What nonsense is that? I mean, he's caught in all kinds of lies. But, you know, I mean, once he lays down that word, Sophi, meaning sophist, you know, Paul's done. I mean, if Yahusha came up to you speaking Greek and called you a sophist, would that be a good thing or would it be an insult?
No, that'd be an insult, of course.
Yeah, it would be an all-out attack right away. There's no way for them to jump around that word. It just cannot really be done. You know, make them look it up. And he goes on to say also with the remaining...
Well, that's the problem. None of them look up any of this. They all take their English translation as the Word of God.
Oh, yeah. It's outrageous. I mean, we all know how accurate Biblias are. You know, they're intentionally misleading. They constantly copy edit. Anytime the word Torah is used, they replace that with law. They will add words that aren't there. They will take away words that are there, and they'll misinterpret other words that are there. I mean, it couldn't get any worse.
The best things you can do for people is to show them the errancy of their English translations. If you can get them to realize that, you have a chance of getting them to question. But most people, you can show them all the evidence in the world that their English Bible is corrupt and errant, and they're going to deny it to the day they die because they don't want to think.
Well, no, I had a lovely statement on one of my posts not too long ago where, you know, I was showing a word-for-word amplified breakdown of a passage, and a guy got on there and he said, "I've been reading your notes." And he said, "After prayerful consideration, I believe you're being led by Satan."
No, so, sure you're
in other words,
wrong. You go, well, that word's mistranslated because here's evidence. No, I prayed about it, and you know, the spirit that leads me says that you're being led by Satan, which would be true. You're being led by the adversary of the spirit that leads him.
Well, my adversary, of course, I'm with Yahweh, so, I mean, you know, I just said that to him. I said, so Yahweh's accurate
word. The spirit of evil, which is the, you know, Yahweh is the adversary of the spirit that leads him, so he's true.
Absolutely.
You are being led by
him. Yeah, so I would be the ha-satan, the enemy. Yeah, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, mm-hmm. Literally, that would be correct.
In their religion, Yahweh is Satan.
That's right. Yeah, it's all backwards. But as I look at it, then he says, also with the remaining writings pertaining to their own individual destruction and annihilation of themselves. So he's saying turn away because they misrepresent and distort. Turning away as also with the remaining writings pertaining to their own individual destruction and annihilation of themselves. That's hardly an endorsement. Starts out calling him a sophist and then says, don't read his material. And what they do is they go in between, and you can tell some of this has even been manipulated by now, because this is not one of the 69. I think this is P72, if I'm not mistaken. Where he's saying into the malleable, they try to go, the malleable will misrepresent and distort, in other words, what Paul was saying. But that's not what he was saying here. They'll misrepresent and distort and start a religion is what he's saying, and that's basically what they did, right?
Exactly what they did, yeah. And there's no such thing as religion. And Yahweh's terms. He doesn't even have a word.
No, he never established a religion. I mean, that's one of the problems you have with the Messianics is they've got one foot in a grave and the other on the banana peel.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to, take a little bit of both religions and come up with this other religion when the object is to walk away from religion. And that's what Yahweh had Abram do. Walk out of Babylon. Walk out of there. Let's get into what is real. You know, that's very, very, very important.
To me, the bottom line is, you know, no one ever endorses Paul. And to twist a letter from Shimon Kepesh and say that he did, even if we couldn't find the older papyri that had it, you know, correct, even though, number one, is because it's in Greek, but, I mean, if we didn't have anything in beyond Greek, like in Hebrew, if he wrote it, it was in Hebrew. The whole thing is a joke. I mean, no one endorses him. How could a disciple endorse Paul, who misquotes or never quotes, I should say, anything that Yahusha said? They threw him out in Acts. They threw him out. I'm sorry?
Take it a step further. Let's say Peter did endorse Paul. Does that
matter?
Paul, right?
Do anything for me, he's still wrong. He's still done to both of them.
Peter's letter scripture?
Yeah.
No. Peter's letter is Peter's letter. Has Peter been wrong before?
Throughout
the eyewitness account, do we see Peter making mistakes? So, even if he endorsed Paul, it doesn't matter. That's a man. That
right.
is not
well,
wrong.
It certainly doesn't matter because Yahusha even said he could fool any of you. He was talking to Peter
exactly.
The disciples. I mean, but clearly, you know, in defense of Peter, in defense of Shimon, what I want to say is, he didn't fool him. He didn't fool him.
Yeah, I think it's important to recognize that for, you know, the sake of Peter. But the fact is that Peter did recognize, you know, was misled by Paul. It still doesn't matter. It's a, you know, strong, it's misdirection on the part of...
Well, they've got to get around that word sophist to me. Calling him a sophist. Whoa! Are you kidding me? And then, I mean, just to buttress that point, and I'm going to do that now because this would come from a sophist. Over in Corinthians 11:7 and then 11:8, here are Paulos's grand words, the sophist. I committed a sin in humbling myself because I preached the gospel of God to you without charge. First of all, it's Torah. It's not gospel. We know gospel is God's spell, and grace is gratia. So that, you know, the gospel of grace is God's spell of gratia. And I robbed other churches, taking wages to serve you. Okay, now these are from Paulos over here in Corinthians. Now, what does Yahweh say over in Yahshua 55:3? Says this. Without money or cost, he says, listen carefully to me. Incline your ear. Come to me. Listen that you may live. And I will be able to establish an everlasting covenant relationship with you. So we know the covenant's everlasting. That's vis-a-vis the Torah. And two, it's free and there's no cost. Now, why would somebody be out charging you to share Yahweh's words? Something Paulos never did, by the way. Never claim he did. You know, whatever words of Yahweh's he shared were in opposition. They were wrong. They were always wrong. He always misquoted.
So he just made it up. And then you have him, and there's only a few things where he even twists what Yahshua said. He just, he's on his own. He's going down his own path on everything he said. One of the things early in my walk, J.B. said while he was talking to Yada about a false prophet. And when they were talking about Paul and proving he was a false prophet, he met all the definitions of Deuteronomy. J.B. just said, based on that alone, I don't care if you can write the whole book with all this other stuff. It doesn't make any difference. He doesn't qualify. He's not a spokesman for Yah. He's dead, you know, dead in the water.
Yeah, and that's all you need.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to explain those, J.B.? Explain those in Dabarim.
Oh, man, don't get me going off the top of my head.
For starters,
I don't have
the start is they have to proclaim themselves as speaking for God. You know, a person has to be a Nabi, which isn't, you know, we translate it as prophet, but it's actually anyone who claims to speak on behalf of God, whether they offer prophecy or not, which is why Paul, you know, who never offers a single bit of prophecy, would still qualify as a Nabi because, you know, he claimed to speak on behalf of God.
Mm-hmm.
One second. Let me pull it up.
How would we know his words were false? I know one way. Yahweh said if somebody claims to be speaking for me, you know, if they're writing it down, that my signature will be in there. And my signature is prophecy.
Number one,
and there is no prophecy.
The key. Is the person a Nabi, someone who claims to speak on behalf of God? Is the person, Zayed, someone who oversteps their bounds, acting presumptuously with an inflated sense of self-worth, demonstrating self-reliance while taking liberty? Someone who arrogantly pretends to know, who insults others and is disrespectful, displaying pride in the pursuit of personal recognition and acclaim while demeaning competitors? Someone who rebels against the legitimate authority and is prone to anger? Someone who searches with frustration and is often furious, overbearing, rude, and conceited. That's a lot to say with one word.
I know, but have you ever seen an example of Paul better than that?
No.
I mean, that's
a perfect, prescription. And we're about to get into that, by the way. We're about to get into that.
The
that exact thing.
Dabar, Bayan, Shayem, openly and publicly preached to others, Paul did that, is the person, Lo Suha, inconsistent with what God has instructed and directed. Does the message conflict with God's appointed, constituted, and decreed? Does it vary from his instruction, i.e. Torah? Right, there's a big test, too. Not only prophecy, if they're contradicting what God has already revealed, there's no way they can speak for God.
Well, let's try this one. Let's try this one. Charis and gratia, be to you, and peace from God our Father and our upright one, Masiyah Yahusha. Okay, so.
You know, that goes against the fifth part of the Deuteronomy test. Does the person, Dabar Bashem Ahir Elohim, speak in the name of gods other than Yahweh? What name did you just say in there?
That would be the charities, the Charis and the Gratia. Yeah. Yeah.
Three little gods. Three little girls.
Yeah. I mean, that's
and
kind of a card
is accurately portraying the past and the future, which, again, Paul
never
did.
Is. No.
So
he had
also
he had one prophecy, and it didn't come true.
Utter failure.
Yeah, now, you said something earlier here just a minute ago where he speaks presumptuously and he's kind of puffed up and exalted himself. And here's what it's here's where Paulos, meaning he who is lowly and little, comes out and he literally says that he's demon possessed. And that, this is the thing that throws me, Satan is helping him to get out Yahweh's words. Now, have you ever known Satan, in anywhere? Did Halal Ben Shikar actually work to get Yahweh's words out anywhere? That you guys, I see cover-ups, I see religions started, I see words that are missing. I see all kinds of things in religious activity that are clearly born of the enemy. To us. But I don't see anywhere where Halal Ben Shikar is out there trying to advance and promote Yahweh's words and get them to us in an uncorrupted fashion. Have you guys ever found that? Anywhere?
Well, about the only two.
That's
really
the opposite of his job title.
Yeah.
There you go.
But he's the one that's in the garden twisting the words. He's the one that's in the 40 days of testing of Yahusha, he's the one that is twisting what Yahweh said to Yahusha. He's never, ever found quoting Yahweh correctly.
Well, you know what?
Certainly not.
Paul disagrees with you, Kirk.
I know. Well, that's okay. I'd like to be honest with Paul.
Yeah, well, he's in direct opposition because here's what he says. Dio, which is therefore, Henna, in order that I not become overly proud and lifted up, there was given to me a sharp goad, a troubling thorn. He uses the thorn, which represents sin. I got to love it. In the body, a messenger of Satan, in order to strike me and restrain me. For what reason? So that as a result, at the present time, there is the possibility I might not be conceited, currently exalting myself beyond what would be justified and lifting myself up. So we've got a messenger from Satan giving him a sharp goad, like a thorn in the side, so that Paul can get Yahweh's words out, so he won't be so exalting himself, and he... You know, wouldn't
How
so justify
big is your ego that about. Satan has to keep it in check?
Well, in order to get Yahweh's words out, because this is what Paul's claiming he's doing now.
How can you read something that's obviously unpossessed inside of me as the spirit of Satan and then take the man seriously from that point on?
Right, but you were just talking to me a minute ago about the in Dabarim, I'm pretty sure, about somebody being so proud and puffed up. Right. I mean, it doesn't get any more proud and puffed up than this.
No.
I mean, you know,
Harmon waited until, like, his deathbed speech to say that he was possessed by a demon. Paul got it out there pretty early on.
He said it, too. He said he was demon-possessed as well in his last public speech.
Yeah. At least he waited until he died, though.
His wife,
Paul
too.
Went ahead and did it right out front. That takes some...
Ramadan, yeah.
Yeah, that takes some arrogance.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it really does. Now... We all know what Paulos means, and I like to beat that dead horse, sort of. And the reason that I like to do that is very simple. Words mean things, especially in Yahweh's words. They all mean things. And in first Shamuel, he's talking to Sheol, the king, King Sheol, the namesake of Sheol, which was Paulus' real name, and told Sheol that he knew he felt lowly as a person. Wow. And it was John Powers. I was talking to him on the phone, Dee Powers' husband. She's a member of our group. He brought that up. I mean, that's very pertinent. The king who hated Dodd and wanted Yisrael to follow him as a man as opposed to Yahweh is the archetype for Sheol, who renamed himself Paulos. He was lowly and little, and he felt lowly and little. Wow. Isn't that kind of amazing?
It is amazing.
That's one of those nice little gems you find. It's too perfect. And then it gets even more perfect because we go into Daniel. And this is one that Yada found. I was thinking about trying to understand the horns. And he's talking about the beast here, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then behold, another and final horn / individual leader, a smaller one of lower status, came up between and among them. And three among the initial group of horns were dehorned from before. Then behold, eyes like the eyes of a human in this unique horn. This is the one that was lowly and little,
right,
among with a mouth speaking powerfully and abundantly as an esteemed authority.
Mm-hmm.
Yada writes here, I caught myself laughing out loud. Sheol, the founder of the Christian religion, and the author of over half the faith's New Testament, of course, put in a book by Marcion, a son of a bishop who declared the Jewish God dead, chose the Roman name Paulos, which means lowly and little. Now, isn't that just what happened over here in 1 Samuel? Yeah, so Sheol there was lowly and little, and Sheol here is lowly and little, and Paulos changed his name to lowly and little. What are the odds of that being an accident, you guys?
Oh, it's no accidents in this stuff.
Slim to none.
And the lowly little, he's obviously the archetype for that, you know, for the tallest one that comes again, so.
Yeah, and Paul obviously serves as the archetype for what the religious initiates call the Antichrist. Yeah, y'all kind of never wrote that term anywhere. That should be pointed out. He wrote... he wrote in Hebrew, but what he wrote is man opposed to the Torah. Anomos is what's in there. And Daniel calls him the beast. So you can call him the beast, you can call him the man in opposition to the Torah, but Antichrist was never written on anything.
No.
You know, other than a Hollywood movie and in the book named after the sun goddess Biblius, where they do the same thing everywhere. And this is all designed to be very misleading. Matter of fact, he'll be very pro-Christ. And this tells us he's going to be what? A Pauline Christian, right?
Mm-hmm. Or an amalgamation of. Certainly with a big influence of that, yeah.
Right. And you know, and of course in Chavaluk he tells us that this guy named Sheol is going to confuse many different people from many different races and places all over the world. And that's why in Yirmiyah, he says, O Yahweh, the Gentiles shall come to you from the ends of the earth and say, now these are the Gentiles coming to Yahweh now, surely our fathers have inherited lies that are worthless and all unprofitable things. While will a man make a mighty one for himself? The answer is, yeah, sure they will. The Lord Jesus Christ, which are not the mighty one. Therefore, behold, I will this once cause them to know my hand, my might, and they shall know my name is Yahweh. O Gentiles, you shall come, they shall come to you, O Yahweh, the Gentiles shall come to you from the ends of the earth and say, surely our fathers inherited lies, worthlessness, and unprofitable things. Now, why would they say that if what Paul said was true?
They couldn't say that if what Paul said was true.
No, they would have millions of billions of people that fill these churches or even say, well, you know, I might not go to church, but I do believe this and that. And, you know, it's always what Paul says. It's always a matter of faith rather than relying on what's real. And this is all very real.
Faith is the gospel of grace. All I have to do is believe, and I am good to go. I don't have to go to church. I ain't got to do anything. I could be the most horrible person in the world.
Not only that, but based on that, who is it you're putting your faith in?
Grace.
Yeah, Gratia, the foreign god, goddesses. Wow. Isn't that in direct opposition again?
Yeah, well, number one, he says, don't bring any of those gods with me, around me. You can't be in my presence with them. And secondly, he says, don't even let them come out of your mouth, other than the fact that we're describing something, you know. But I mean, certainly not in a reverent attitude or respectful attitude towards them.
Right. Anyway, make the names to condemn them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, we're in horrible opposition again, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. To call, yes.
Total opposition. Now, remember, it was a thorn, that sharp goad, and that thorn.
Mm-hmm.
I want to take this from Bamidbar, the wilderness, called Numbers in the corrupted version. It's 20, verse 1. The entire community of the children of Yisrael came to the desert of Sin, T-S-I-N, in the first and foremost month, and the people in Kadesh, which is basically a word that means set apart from light, taken from Kadar, means they're in darkness and all that. And Miriam died. There she was buried. You know, that's the same thorn, that sin. You know, there are lessons in sin, you know. Sin is a thorn, like the one Paul said was in his side. When he admitted to being demon-possessed and controlled by Satan in his second letter to the Corinthians, it is the stinger Yahusha referred to when he spoke about Satan deliberating venom. It's also the goad, or prod, used to control dumb animals. And apparently that means that he really was a dumb animal.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem, because Paul cited the most famous line from Dionysus during his conversion experience on the road to Damascus, saying it was difficult to kick against the goad. That's a line taken out of the Greek god Dionysus' mouth, and that's the one he put in Yahusha's mouth. In this conversion experience that he invented on the road to Damascus. Isn't that amazing? All those times?
Yeah. Well, it comes to mind a couple of things, if I can. When you think just Paul's name, lowly and little, think of all the names of all the disciples, of all the different people that Yah has chosen to share his word. And you've got the gift of something, Matanyah, you've got the power with, or the strength with, or one who listens to, you know, Lowly and Little as a name. And then
I've always said that alone should make anybody stop.
It should put up some red flags to you, if nothing else. And then that most famous quote, you know, that Yahusha says that, you know, I came in my name and you rejected me. I came in my father's name, rather, and you rejected me. Yahusha, Yahweh saves. And a man who comes in his name, not his given name, the name he chose, Paulus, and you accept him, and he's the most quoted man in human history.
It's astounding.
Narrow is the way, and offended, and he's the most quoted man by all these people in human history. How do you reconcile all that? You can't. I mean,
you lose
before you walk through the door.
Well, know what you do? You want to know what you do, JB? Here's what you do. You throw up 2 Peter 3:16, and you go to the middle of it, saying, well, people that are confused aren't going to see it properly. That's how they're trying to interpret that. Well, once you're called a sophist, you're finished. You're finished. After that, and then to end the passage, saying, don't read his books. They lead to separation and destruction and you know, to what is a zob. I mean, help me here. You know, if you painted a picture, you know, or JB, if you went into a place to get an, you know, to get a job, you know, as their IT man, and you said, well, yeah, call Larry over there at Sharper Edge. He can tell you all about me. And I said, you know, this guy is a total bum. He screwed up my SEO. He wiped out our customer base. He almost broke us. Would that be an endorsement?
Not really. Unless they're hiring me to go up for their competitors.
For their competitors.
yeah. Could Shimon have said anything worse if somebody said, you know, I understand that you know, Kirk's quite the artist. His techniques are really advanced, and I'm trying to purchase some of his art because I believe it's going to go up in value. And he told me that you were an expert. And I said, are you kidding me? Nobody knows this guy. What gallery is he in? Stay away from him. Would that be an endorsement, Kirk?
No, sir.
Well, that's what they're doing. Don't read his material. It leads to destruction. How far does it have to go?
Yeah.
It would be like saying, you say, he has no talent, and they just exclude the word no.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. That's what they do. They just exclude the parts that, they don't quote the parts that are negative. Yeah, they take those out and make it, put a positive spin on it.
Wow. Anyway, I wanted to get that out there. There's you know, when you literally, you know, this is according to Dabarim now, this is Torah, when you take the words of pagan gods or goddesses, this is foreign gods, foreign Elohim, you take these people and you, these names, and you put them in the mouth of Yahweh and Yahusha, because he does both. He does both. He's claiming he's speaking for God, and, you know, over there on the road to Damascus, he's putting the most famous line from Dionysus in the mouth of Yahusha. Now, what are the odds that Yahweh would go along with that? Anybody?
Zero.
None.
That ain't going to happen. There's no possible way.
I had another debate. You know how they'll take Eilif Dalit Nun, and they'll make really what's Eden, or the upright pillar, into Adonai, which is my Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Very, very, very strange that they do that. You know, especially every time Yahweh uses the name, uses the title Lord, and there we see it in the Torah. It's talking about a man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's never talking about Yahweh. They're calling the man my Lord. They work for him. You know, that kind of thing. all 335 times it appears in the Tanakh, and the word Lord is used, it's describing men. And in two-thirds of these cases, we find Adon translated Lord, and then remaining one-third, it's rendered as Master. But Lord and Master, the church of religious deity beating you down is not what Yahweh is.
No.
No, he makes it very clear. I like Malachi a lot, because he rips right into those who did it. He says, look, you're not lifting up my presence in the Torah. Now, that rips right into the idea of the Babylonian Trinity myth, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Yahweh's calling it his presence.
Right. Yes, there is no Trinity. We were talking about that today on the morning show, or at least Yada was talking about, we started out with Ruach Kodesh is set apart, and then we're using examples of set apart, and most set apart is if a piece of gold or a little small flake of gold is still gold, but is set apart is not as powerful as is not the big stack of gold.
It's valuable as the
whole water example again, with the a bucket of water that can be turned into steam and powered, or it can be turned into ice and made into an object you can see, but it's still not the ocean. I mean, so there is no Trinity. You can't get Trinity out of the Torah.
Well, you can't get it out of Kodesh either, because
no.
Here's the problem, my friend. It's got to be set apart from somewhere.
No.
Well, furthermore, Kodesh doesn't just mean set apart. It means separated and set apart.
Set apart
separated
for a special reason, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be set apart from someplace. I'm taking it that that's Yahweh. And that's why he says the son highly values, esteems, and respects his father and a servant his master. So if I'm a father, where's my honor and esteem? And if I'm a Lord, where is my respect, says Yahweh, of the spiritual regiment to you, O clerics who despise my name? He's attacking them because they'll call him Lord. And I've had this happen in debates where they're calling him Lord. And then you turn around and you say, wait a minute. You show him all this stuff with Lord where he won't even be called Lord because he wants to be greeted as an individual, which was one of my favorite verses. Passages when I first walked towards the truth, and it's because it made me realize I was not a religious deity. I was so thankful for that.
Mm-hmm.
Makes things so much easier, more comfortable, more familial, more friendship.
Yeah. It made me want to meet him, which is his whole point to what we're doing.
The
people that want to meet Yahweh is the people Yahweh wants to meet. You know, it's kind of a quid pro quo. You know, it wouldn't matter to you guys if I said, I got 30 people over here. They don't really care much for you. They don't care to meet you. Would you like to meet them? What would you say?
No, thank you.
Right after I eat this apple, pal. Just ask the blue. I'll be holding my breath.
Unique about people who are in Yahweh's family is so many people in this world are totally worried about popularity. They don't care about the quality of their friendships, it's the amount of friends that they have. I could care less how many friends I have, it's what quality of friends do I have. I have maybe I can count my friends on one hand, but those are all people that will be there for me no matter what. I'm not a popular person. I don't have 50 people who just love being around me who I don't know anything about. The people
can understand that, JB. I can understand that.
And that's what Yahweh wants. Yahweh ain't looking for a popularity contest. He wants meaningful relationships.
Now, how do we know? How do we know that Yahweh was right here when he found this? How do we know that it was, besides the fact that Yahweh just said it, but I mean, let's go beyond that. How do we know that Adon was really Eden, the upright pillar? Well, I'm going to tell you how we know. He's talking about the suffering servant here. in Malachi. He talks about his return. He talks about how he's despised fruit, and you pierce him. And here's what he says when he talks about him being despised fruit. And this is Yahweh talking. But you pierce him. You defile it with your boastful decorations. The table of my Eden, upright one, is defiled fruit, is despised food. Oh boy, when we change a word, we should be careful that we change it everywhere. Because here's the problem. You've got Yahweh talking here. He's talking about Yahusha. Tell me, guys, what are the odds he called him my Lord?
Zero. There's no chance.
Well, in order for Adonai to be true, that's what he would have just done there. We got problems, Houston. We have rewrites. We have the upright pillar that was changed to my Lord. So when you're out there and they say, well, you know, the Jews called him my Lord. Well,
the rabbis, yeah.
Yeah, the rabbis, yeah. Yehudim, supposedly. Mm-hmm. They're not Yehudim. They're not related to Yah at all. They're very corrupted. He said so. And he says, so then this condition is to you, O clerics. If you don't listen, and if you don't place it on your heart to give great honor, respect, and dignity to my name, says Yahweh of the spiritual regiment, I will send out in among you all a curse. I will curse with your kneeling down. I will bring a curse on her, meaning Yisra El, because you did not place it on your heart. My upright one. And they wouldn't even use his name. They wouldn't even use Yahusha to this day. It's Yeshua. And then they try to somehow amalgamate that into Jesus somehow. I see them do it all the time. And well, that wasn't even the rabbis. This is the messianics doing that one. He's my upright one. He certainly wasn't calling Yahusha his Lord. This is Yahweh talking. So we got problems, don't we?
Oh yeah. If you study a little bit, I've studied a good little bit on the languages and gone back and back to dictionaries, to umpteen dictionaries, lexicons, etc. And you can see where they've changed it. You can see where they've added vowel points to mispronounce it. Keep it all in context. They say don't change one letter, don't change one stroke of one letter. The jot and the tittle reference in Greek, but also in the Hebrew. And it is a total effort to scratch out his name, change his name. And once you pick up on it, and you go back to the older records, it does not say that. But, I mean, I can't prove it to you unless you want to go through all that stuff. And then it's obvious to you if you take the time to do it, but you do have to take some time if that's a concern for you. But, you know, in the context of Paul never, I don't think Paul ever said Yahusha anywhere, did he?
It's
Ausus. Yeah. It's all in Greek, but it's always Ausus or Ausun or Lord, which is Baal in Hebrew. So, I mean, he's...
Yeah, well, absolutely it is. There's no question about it, because he says, when he's talking about the return, I mean, you know, he says, you won't ever call me Bali, which is Lord, again, mm-hmm. You know. Right. Instead, you're going to, you know, recognize and welcome me as an individual. Ishi, that's what he says.
So when you're debating with people or you're getting questioned by people that are relatively new, I mean, when you...
Yeah, and I'm more interested in that, by the way.
Sure.
They have a question, and then, you know, sure. We put it out there.
And, yep. and you give them 5, 6, 7, 8 things about Paul. I mean, how does that resonate? What kind of feedback do you get? I mean, other than...
Well, almost resoundingly, it's, you know, for people that are looking for the truth, they're positive. They get it. You know, they say, you know, I never liked Paul. You know, Paul,
you know, you remember that.
He's the most complicated guy I've ever read, tried to read.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really read his stuff in any reasonable way. I mean, in any reasonable way, you can't. It can't really be done. But when, you know, you look at who, well, the problem with people is, you know, I had a guy actually last night tell me it wouldn't matter how you got money if you used it correctly. In other words, you could go out and lie. In the name of Yahweh, no less. This was his position. Excuse me. And I had some air go down the wrong way there. Anyway, you could go out and lie in the name of Yahweh, and it wouldn't matter if you made a lot of money because you could do a lot of good things with that money.
Well, that's Machiavellian, though, there, right?
Oh, yeah.
He's just by the means, though, and that's bizarre. The attitude that you have with something according to Yah and the way that you approach it, he's not interested in you doing great things. He's done every great thing that's ever going to be done. We don't do anything. I mean, we in regards to if we're looking for something, let's go out and do something great. That's their argument when they're on trial. But look at all the great things we've done, Yahweh. Now, they call him Lord then, too. Look at all the great, but Lord, look at all the wonderful things we've done. Look at our love for the church and the institutions we've built and people we've cared for. And what does Yahweh say? Get away from me. I don't know you.
Yeah, I don't think he describes Christians, by the way. Only Christians do all prophesy and heal the sick and all that stuff. I mean, these are Christians talking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there's no other religion in the world that does this.
Well, most of the Muslims will be gone at that point when he's talking too. So
yeah, well, I mean, and here we're talking religious people because they're healing in his name and they're building buildings in his name and they're prophesying in his name and they're healing the sick in his name.
All the good
only
work,
religious
yeah.
people do this. So what religion could that be?
It has to be the Christian religion. How do new people deal with, because I was stunned by this one when it happened, when they first started translating Chabuk. When you recognize that not only does he call him the plague of death, but he's the only person that Yah calls out by name of all the evil people in the earth. For all his time, he calls out Paul specifically.
Oh, no, he calls out Esau. There's two.
Okay, I beg your pardon. We said I hated him since he was a child, but I mean, he goes at great lengths to talk about Paul and Chabuk. It was just amazing to me. This is the founder, the most quoted man in all of the world, the founder of the largest religion ever in the history of mankind. Wow.
Well, not just that. He says that he's going to be a proud and arrogant, puffed up individual. I think we just
covered that.
Satan had to send people to emissaries in order for Paul to get the word out, just to keep him in check. He was so great, you know. And then he says he's going to be at the sacrifice. He says he'll be at the Moed. The fulfillment of the Moed. And it turns out that Sheol was in rabbi school at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And he says he's going to mislead Gentiles from all over the planet. And didn't Paul claim to be the, you know, purveyor of Yahweh's message to the Gentiles? The apostle to the Gentiles.
Mm-hmm. Everybody else stay away, they're mine.
Yes. Yet, but who was it? Why didn't Yahushua pick Paul to write Revelation?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to the seven letters, to the seven ecclesia, to the, you know.
Why doesn't Yahweh return to build a kingdom of Paul instead of Dod? David.
Yeah, we got that problem too in Dod. Yeah. You know, he was more observant.
If we're just playing debater,
yeah,
who wants to defend Paul? Are you kidding?
Not me. I'd have to keep going back to a rewrite in 2 Peter 3:16, and then I could only use a very small part of it, like two or three words.
And then twist that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, over and over, you're going to have to go back here to 2. First of all, that's all covered. It's a catch-all. It's the catch-all. Oh, you mean the one where he was called a sophist. And he proves it. because he's bitching about not getting paid. So he had to steal the money, by the way. That's what he said.
Well, they made merchandise him in, didn't they, from the start?
Oh, yeah. You know, when I start thinking about people's faith and belief, and I understand, you know, reality. So, you know, somebody could come up to me, or I could come up to you, JB, and I could say, you know, I believe there's a man in the moon, and he's a very wise man, and he sends me messages. Now, how would you put the kibosh on that?
Well, we'd probably want to take
prove it.
See a doctor.
There you go. Prove it. Prove it. You know, I mean, it'd be a simple matter. I mean, Yahweh puts these incredible prophecies in his words.
Yeah, that's the way I put it to one Christian I was arguing with. I was like, okay, me and you can both agree that, you know, let's take a handful of people that claim to speak for God. Paul, Joseph Smith, and Muhammad. Now, we would both agree that Muhammad and Joseph Smith did not speak for God. We disagree on whether or not Paul spoke for God. So, the burden of proof, in my opinion, should always lie on the person claiming to speak for God. So, you're claiming that Paul spoke for God. Prove it. And they're never able to give any kind of proof other than it's in the Bible. That is their sole basis of proof.
Well, there were two sun goddesses, by the way. You know, Holy was a sun goddess.
Yeah.
she was the consort to Krishna, the eastern sun god. Their most important sun festival was Holy. I mean, that's just the way it is. Now, wasn't there something about speaking the names of foreign gods?
Mm-hmm. Don't bring it around. It's just not my presence. It's very plain. It's real simple. It is. You ain't going to bring it around here. You can do what you want. You have free will. Don't bring it. You're not going to be with
me. Anyone who speaks the name of foreign gods doesn't speak for him.
That's right.
And then I want to go back to this Trinity myth for just a moment. you know, I'm going to read you, and I seldom do this, I'm going to read a passage out of that book named after the sun goddesses. And this is the King James Version. And this is what they call Yasha-Yah. They call Isaiah. It's really Yasha-Yah. And Yasha is the Paleo-Hebrew word for what? Salvation, right? So salvation is from Yahweh. Says this. Or Yahweh saves, however you want to put it. To what purpose is the multitude of your sacrifices unto me, saith the Lord? I am full of burnt offerings of rams. Now, I'm not sure what the hell that means, but that's what they said. And then, you know, just the New Living Translation, they opine in it. What makes you think I want your sacrifices, says the Lord. I'm sick of your burnt offerings of rams. Now, that's not what it says. Here's what it says, and this is in Yashaiah 1:11. Now suddenly this makes sense to me. This is why there's no cost to me. This is why my behavior and belief and faith is really not the issue. The issue is, do I want to meet Yahweh and walk on his path? He says this, what is it to me the many sacrifices of yours? They got that much right. Says Yahweh, not the Lord, says Yahweh. I have completely satisfied and literally fulfilled the uplifting offerings of lambs. Now, would that have a meaning to you, either of you guys? I have fulfilled the uplifting offering of lambs.
Well, it's not at all. Not us.
Yeah. I mean, straight up, I'm the guy doing this.
Yeah.
Not you. You know, we had this
discussion. We eat lamb. You know, we eat this nourishment. We benefit from it.
We benefit from it.
Pretty sweet, too, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a wonderful deal. It's a perfect deal. It's the best plan ever made. Ever will be made. So, I mean, what's the...
And this is why I thought it was a profound statement. And, you know, Craig has a tendency to come up with these profound statements and just kind of blow right by them. Yeah, I mean, really. I mean, something you might read 10, 20 times, and then he comes up with this concept, and it's right there in front of your face the whole time. You know, but Larry's stupid.
Yeah, he's a,
great
connector, you know.
Yeah, well, and that brings us to this, though. We already know who's providing the uplifting offering of lambs. There's no burnt, what was it that they wanted to say in there? He was full of the burnt offerings of rams or something. it just wasn't even in there.
Yeah.
Okay. And a word-by-word breakdown, we could. I promise you, Lord isn't there, and being full of rams isn't there, but whoever wrote that was full of something, and it probably wasn't lamb. Okay, now pay attention. Behold, look now and see. The day is coming prophetically, declares Yahweh. I will take a stand, establish, raise up through Dode, and up in righteous branch, and he will reign as a king. And he will prudently prosper by teaching that which is proper, and he shall act and actively engage in the means which will be used to achieve justice and resolve disputes. Isn't that the seven Moed Mikra?
Absolutely. It's Passover. It's Matzah. It's Bukum.
It's all of them. It's all seven of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but yeah, agreed. It's those three specifically. It isn't that what Yahushua
did. It's the path with right that way. It's absolutely the path you have to walk on.
Yeah.
And we're just supposed to walk on it. We observe it. Learn from it.
Yeah, that which is required according to the standard in the land. In his day, Yehuda will be saved, and Yisra El will live and dwell in confidence, expressing their trust and reliance. And, of course, this is, after the fact. And thus, this his name, which he shall be called, Yahweh, is our righteousness and our vindication. He pointed out that vindication, Tzedakah, is translated, really, righteous. And righteous, of course, we can see the word right in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
That's right. Yeah.
So, what he pointed out is being right about responding correctly to Yahweh's invitations and responding correctly to his mitzvah and his chukka and the mitzvah, these are what's important. It isn't my personal personality traits. In other words, if somebody views me as not being nice, and one thing I've learned about the Holy Spirit is that as long as you comb your hair a certain way and maybe you're a good dancer and you smile a lot and you're very kind while you lie to people and you accept other lies without much of a fuss, you're okay. But what I've found about the truth is that you're not okay when you're not on the path and your personality traits and your lovely deeds really don't have much of anything to do with it at all. Would that be fair to say, you guys?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If you're spreading the gospel, you're in deep trouble. I don't care how nice a guy you are. You're on the wrong side.
And Dode was who? I mean, he was the most loved, much loved. I mean,
let me go back real quick to righteous. You know, tzedakah is the word, of course, but we translate it in English righteous, and you get that from Latin, which is rec, and rec is straight, and it's backbone. It's used when you talk about as backbone. It's when you use an upright pole all very synonymous with things we're discussing when we talk about Yahusha. So when he's doing that, being upright, having a backbone, doing the right thing in regards to the things that Yahweh has asked you to do, which is to Shemar Torah, observe the Shabbat, as we're doing now, to observe the Moed Mikris, which we've done, we've completed for this year just recently. That's what he's asked you to do. He didn't ask you to be perfect. He will, because you do those things and turn to him and you walked away to begin with, away from involvement in the earth, in the country's situations and their government and their wars, then you are right in his eyes. And if you keep it in mind that way, instead of thinking, oh, perfection, as the, you know, as we all did as Christians, thinking, oh God, I'm this and I'm that, and then you understand what he loved about Dode. Dode was always clear on what was important to Yahweh and never missed a beat when it came to what Yahweh wanted. He was a pretty rogue. He was a bit of a rogue, yeah. If you were running,
he had seven or eight wives. He had several.
Yeah, he'd be looking at your girlfriend. You might want to hit him. But in God's eyes, he said, these are the things that are important to me because you are there to be a witness to them, to the rest of the world. And Dode certainly qualified as that. I mean, he's the one that wrote 119 Psalms plus all those others.
Well, here's what Dode said in the 119th, 113. He said this. This is a Sayef. I'm sure you know that word, JB. Those with divided loyalties, you know, people that are hypocritical and half-hearted, apathetic, say F. This is what Dode says. Saying, I hate and I oppose them. The Torah I love and have developed a close relationship with. I never thought it was possible to do that, okay, originally with the Torah. I see what Dode's talking about. The deeper you get, the more you understand the relationship and the relational nature of everything that's all tied together perfectly and seamless. But that's what he says. So anybody that would say, as an example, that he would hope everybody under the Torah, when they were getting circumcised, would end up being castrated instead, would that be pro-Torah?
Well, that's just plain disgusting. Yeah. That goes beyond being just Torahless. It's just, that's so disgusting and mean. I mean, he's
a hateful prick, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, huh? No pun intended.
Yeah. I didn't think about that. I just threw it out there, general consumption. But, Paul, he's a sophist. He's a guy out there espousing human wisdom. You know, when you really look at Paul, first of all, a Christian will tell you, all they got to do is say, oh, you know, it's all by grace, I believe, end of story. But you really get into them, and no, there's really good deeds involved, isn't there?
Well, stop 1 second.
Oh, yeah.
They all have their own.
Did y'all ever ask you to believe?
Follow.
No, I asked you to understand.
Understand and to know.
To come to
know. Yeah, belief is a magician's trick.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
He ain't trying to trick you. He said, study it till you absolutely is certainty. You can trust certainty. I don't want your beliefs. I don't want your faith.
You know, we talk a lot about light and time. You know, and I will admit, when I realized that I was into something real and I better start putting a lot of my time and my life into it, it was because of the work on general relativity that had been done and put in front of my face on a silver platter, I might add. I wish somebody had done it for me 40 years ago or something. But, you know, when I saw, did you say the same for you, JB?
Yep, that was what opened my eyes. When you realize the timeline of creation perfectly lines up with relatively with the timeline of history, at that point it's undeniable. I was like, okay, now I got to figure out what else is there to this.
yeah, that 15 days is or excuse me, 15 billion years roughly is 6 days and six nights, 24-hour periods of time.
Yeah, that's incredible.
But we're looking from the perspective of the Creator. So when he said 6 days because of the way time stretches, we talk about that. And I want to put this out here, too, because from the perspective of the Creator, it's still day six, isn't it? Because day seven, we know he's going to rest, right, with his family. Right. That happens for Sukkah at the end of 6,000 years.
On the last Jubilee.
Yeah, in the last Jubilee.
Of this era.
2033 is when that will be. You know, so it's day six still from Yahweh's perspective. And so many times when people will say Shabbat Shalom or Shabbat Shalom to each other, and Shalom means a lot of things other than just peace. It's, you know, the perfect place to be. It's all these wonderful things.
Right.
And we're talking about the seventh day when we rest with Yahweh. That's when everything's going to be perfect, right? Yeah. So the Shabbat is really a foreshadowing of Yahweh's day seven.
Mm-hmm.
When he's going to rest with the family. It's a foreshadowing of Sukkah.
Yeah, we basically Sukkah every week. I mean, that's what the Sabbath is, right?
Yeah, but we do that because it's a foreshadowing of the real seven.
Right,
isn't
absolutely.
It? Uh-huh. Yeah, and that's what that's about. But I want to point, and that's why I brought up time.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something else, you know, about this, and this is one of these things where time stretches in a certain way, you know, as things are denser and hotter, you know, we go back towards the creation, time basically stands still,
right,
which is how 15 billion years becomes 6 days from his perspective. But there's also a way time rolls out, you know, and the way time rolls out is like an atomic half-life is the way I like to put it. They have an actual equation, but you know, just for the sake of simplicity, if we've got 15 billion years and we go halfway point, that's when this atomic half-life would start breaking down. So day one, 7.5 billion years of that 15 billion. And then day two is like three, it's you got to half that again. You know, you go to 3.25. And day three, you go to, you know, like 1.65. And so on and so on and so on. So time would actually be viewed from us in that six-day period of time is that six different epochs of time.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
All right.
Okay. And I'll tell you, when they go back into the fossil record, first of all, what they find in that epoch of time, which would be in day three, which would be about 3 billion years ago, or 3.5 billion years ago, right in that area, you know, would all be encompassed by day three. He said, you know, that's when he made the trees and the grass and everything green.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's the fossils they found. Actually confirm that. That's when trees and, you know, plant life first started. In that epoch of time. Now, in this fourth epoch of time, he doesn't create anything. That's when he says that the greater light will become visible. And that's how it would have worked. Because, you know, if you have all this volcanic activity and the earth full of carbon, and you've made these plants, the plants would just soak that up and proliferate.
Mm-hmm.
But what it would do is it would make the atmosphere translucent, and now you would see.
And, you know, they even had a show on that, a science show, probably about 3 weeks ago I was watching, when they actually did the fossil stuff, these scientists, regardless, I mean, obviously they're not going to refer to the Torah telling us this, but they went to these periods and they showed how plants go, and then they start to produce oxygen, and then it clears the air, and on and on and on. It was remarkable. It was very amazing,
right.
you know, to have it.
That would have happened in that fourth epoch of time,
exactly.
Wouldn't it?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then in the fifth epoch of time, you know, that's when he starts talking about, you know, insects and birds and this and that and all these things in that fifth epoch of time. And, boy, what do we get? We get the Cambrian explosion, don't we?
Absolutely, yeah, the animals.
And that would be going back 900 million years to 450 million years if we look at it in a fifth epoch of time. And five is not necessarily a good thing because that's also when all those serpents and everything were made, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is very representative of the clergy, isn't it? You know, your
snakes.
Yeah, your Komodo dragon, you know, this filthy, stinking lizard, you know, that goes and bites something, gives it so much bacteria. You know, right down the road, you know, 24 hours later, it dies and it becomes a meal for them. One of the worst animals on earth, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a pretty deadly thing. It's amazing. I've seen them.
And they're filthy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what they do is all that bacteria and filth. You know, that's pretty representative of that 5,000, that 1,000 period, year period of time after Chawa and Adam left the garden, and that's when all the great religions, Abrahamic religions, were born. You know, you had Akiva, you had Apollos, and you had Muhammad, all right in that little area there. Isn't that lovely?
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's just a perfect representation of them. And then day six, of course, he made man. You know, and day six, you know, we'd be going back, you know, like, I don't know, 300 million to now. That, I mean, there are 400 million to now.
If you get The Science of God by Gerald Schroeder, in addition to the chapters that describe it, he has a great chart that just breaks down the 6 days of creation, what science says happened during these epochs and what, you know, scripture says happened during these days, and just shows how they line up perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those books, yeah, I don't recommend Gerald Schroeder for a lot of things, but Hidden Faith of God and Science of God I would recommend as a great open your eyes to the brilliance of scripture books, particularly.
Yeah, and now here you were pretty agnostic, JB.
Oh yeah.
Where
borderline.
Okay, so. Okay. And I was raised by atheists, so I didn't really have a bone to pick anywhere, other than I understood that things don't pop out of nothing. That's called magic.
I was never quite an atheist. I could never get myself to that point, but I was more in the what you would call. Deist. You know, I thought there was a God, but that God had little to nothing to do with us, and we couldn't possibly know him.
Mm-hmm.
But,
and
yeah,
yet, Yahweh said
okay.
Yeah, actually, I went through several sleepless nights thinking about it. I'm going to tell you that right now. You know, once I found out about the 15 billion years equals the 6 days, I just knew I was into something real. I mean, did that give any... That shook you up? Did you lose any sleep over it? Because I was thinking, this is real. All of a sudden, I'm into something real.
I think mine was more gradual. It didn't give me that kind of jostle. It was one of those things I did think about a lot, and I talked with, like, everyone I could meet, talk to about it. You know, it was one of those things. Anytime I was in a conversation with anyone, like, yeah, I've been reading this book, and, you know, it has this. What do you think of that? And it led to a lot of interesting discussions, though.
Mm-hmm. And you, Kirk? What do you mean?
I read a lot of prophecy as a kid, and I didn't grow up in a home that necessarily was religious. My grandfather was very religious. He was an elder in the Presbyterian Church. My father he didn't like government. He didn't really care for. He liked business and he liked sports. That was about it. You know, so, and he was good at both. So. I wasn't sent to church, that sort of thing. I did that later. What I did is I read Velikovsky, and who was an atheist, a Jewish atheist guy, but he took the Bible, so-called, he took the scriptures, the Torah, and he said, if these guys are honestly reporting, there should be evidence of what happened. And he wrote a series of books that are quite famous in the 50s, and proving most all of that happened. And long before anybody considered it scientifically. He didn't write it scientifically. He wrote it, here's the archaeological record, and this is what we know. That would, and then he speculated, this is the way it has to be, logically. So I knew there was a God, but I was kind of like J.B. How do you relate to him? There are umpteen thousand religions. I mean, there's, you know what I mean. There's hundreds of different variations on Christianity. So I said, let me know what you want. I'm all in. I know you're there. Let me know, but I don't know what to do. And that's what finally I said. I went down to Christianity and rabbinical Judaism, and I said, they don't know there's a Messiah. I know that something happened at Passover. Christians at least acknowledge that. So I went down that road with the best scholar I could find, and I learned a lot. Unfortunately, everything is tall line. You know, so I finally, what this did for me when my wife got hold to Yada Yah, and I started reading, and I said, oh God, there's all the gaps. Now I get it.
Yeah, now it's a straight line. It's seamless.
Yeah,
it's perfect. And you
straight
throw
line.
Paul in, and it's a crooked deal, isn't it?
And for your new people that you talk with, I mean, the secret for me, and I can only speak for me, was read it. And then later, after you've read it and start to understand, then get some lexicons and prove it to yourself that he's translating it correctly, because he is. I mean, he ain't perfect. But my gosh, it's not even, the errors are so small. You know, and he corrects them as he goes. It's not many people that do that. You know, I was wrong on it. Let me show you what was right, and then he shoots out another 50 pages.
Yeah, well, most of the time what I've seen where Yada was wrong was mostly it was just in correcting, you know, renewed covenant to covenant that's still
waiting
to be renewed.
You know, because he came out of Christianity too. You know, so he had a lot of baggage as well. That's basically why I wound up where I am, and it's been the most satisfying trip in my life.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Yeah, but
go ahead. No, I was just saying it's just a shame I don't have the abilities and words to convey this to other people. But a lot of that we've discussed multiple times is more about your own personal attitude. You have to want it. The want to, I mean, you can tell them the how to, but you got to have the want to they got to have.
Yeah, I want to hit one other thing about this Trinity issue.
Oh, okay.
If we go to the Mizmor, the song. 22:1, you know, we have Yahusha saying, my El. Singular. Elohim is mighty ones, which really refers to Yahweh in different manifestations, is what it is. My El, why have you forsaken me? And then in the very next passage, in the Mizmor 22:1-2, he said, far away from Yahusha, my salvation, are the words of my groaning, O my Elohim. I call out in the daytime, but you do not answer, and by night, but I have no rest. This is when he is in Sheol, and this is why we know this. First of all, he went my El. How is Sheol defined?
Separation from Yahweh.
Yeah, so Yahweh's spirit cannot be in Sheol. Therefore, he can't be Allah, because Allah spends all his
time. Allah spends his whole life there.
Yeah, just enjoying all that torture. So, the set-apart spirit who was on Yahusha, which is what made him special, that body special. I'm not going to say him, because his consciousness was special. It left because simply the spirit of Yahweh cannot be in Sheol.
Mm-hmm.
And so the very next chapter, he goes from El to Elohim, back to plural. Wow. Now, why do we know what it was he was doing? Well, we can go to Yashayah, 53:11. And he says, when as a concession, he shall render his soul as a guilt offering. And out of the toil, his soul will see the light and find satisfaction. And through knowing, in a relational sense, yada, the one who vindicates, my servant will be vindicated and he will bear their guilt and punishment. So what did we just witness? My El to my Elohim. The set-apart spirit left the body of Yahusha so that body could die. Did Yahusha die? No! His consciousness was fulfilling matzah by perfecting us, by taking that punishment in Sheol for us. And by understanding that in a relational sense, yada, the one who vindicates, my servant, many will be vindicated, and he will bear their guilt and punishment. Wow, that kind of does away with a lot of the nonsense right there.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly explains what's going on, which that's not the the Trinity scenario. Can I throw in this, the original Trinity, where it came from, a little bit, just sort of background?
Yeah, please do.
As you know, there was a guy named Nimrod in Babylon. Now, I remember the Tower of Babel, that story. And Nimrod was the king. And when he died, he was married to a woman called Semiramis, or Semiramis, depending on how you want to pronounce it. And 24 months later, she mysteriously got pregnant. And she claimed, she was a queen at that point, and she claimed that she was impregnated by the, that Nimrod had died and returned. He was a sun god and on earth, and he died and returned to the sun and became the sun god. And he had this, impregnated her with a sunbeam, and then that was obviously in the Easter. And then in December 25th, she delivers a child, and he was Talmos, and he was became the son of the sun. And then she was obviously a virgin because so she became the mother of God, and she was a virginal for some reason. But that's the original myth, and that's carried on from that to Dionysus, to Osiris, and on and on throughout all the things. Now, is there any chance that it would have anything to do with Yahweh? On what we know about Yahweh?
There's not a chance in it.
Nothing. I mean, but it's nice to know that that's where it came from, and it's like so many times you'll cover so many of the historical things about all these pagan things, and this is where this comes from, and you'll say, well, now this is Helios, and this is so-and-so, and if you look them all up, you say, my God, we've been scammed, because that's the Christian belief. That the story you just read prior to that has nothing to do with this.
No, Yahweh's very straightforward. He's he wants us to want to meet him. Therefore, we set apart days where we can meet with him, like we're doing tonight.
Yeah.
You know, we shamar the Torah. We're observing it. And by observing it, we're actually doing family covenant business, aren't we? I mean, we really are.
Sure.
I've had many people ask, why is it on Shabbat, you know, you don't do the work of the messenger. Well, you can't.
Well, the messenger, the work was what he did. We just studied what he did.
Yeah, he did the work.
The work. We're just talking about it and trying to understand it better, to appreciate it, and to celebrate.
Right. But there's people that, you know, one of the things in Rabbinic Judaism, and this was something that Lee shared with me, mm-hmm. is that they make two loaves of bread. Okay.
Yeah.
And they fast in the morning, and they eat the second loaf of bread at high noon. Wow, right there when the sun's right on top of you. Isn't that wonderful?
Really? I didn't know that.
No, I didn't either. Isn't that lovely? Sun worship again. And what are you doing? Well, it's just like the same thing they want to do on Kippurim. They're fasting. They're starving themselves.
If you can contribute something by your starving, it's going to help.
Yeah. why aren't you reconciling with a meal yeah. or something? I mean, yeah. Why don't you do something?
Share
some of Yahweh's word.
Time, you know, so.
Yeah, observe the Torah. See, one of the things I like about Shabbat is that, you know, I don't have to worry about trying to get to sleep early or anything. I'd be up all night, and I can get in here and get into some words. I can share some words. There's plenty of family that I can communicate with through the Internet now.
Right.
I love it.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Thank y'all for the Internet, or else none of us would know each other.
No.
It's great.
It's so funny. I have a tendency to believe that the NWO types, they were going to get all this information and all they've really done is they furthered Yahweh's cause, whether they wanted to or not.
Yeah.
I love that.
Guys, we've reached the end of the NWO. I think I've reached the end of the period I should be sitting, so I'm going to have to get going. Plus, I can smell my lasagna in the oven, almost done, so...
I know that smell.
Can we go off air?
Why don't you smell it? Great. Yeah, we've been all right about it.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I got to go off the dog, too. So. But before you go away, what's the NWO?
New World Order. I mean,
New World Order. Okay.
I don't want to carry on this conversation. But, the elite, I mean, they're out there. They're the power bro. Yahweh talks about them. You know, matter of fact, Shimon does a lot of talking about them.
Satan's ultimate goal, his last hurrah.
Yeah. They're on the way, man, and we're witnessing it. You know, you see Barack Obama say it, you see the UN say it, and then you see the Pope say it. Whatever it is. But it's always bad, and it's always wrong. Anyway.
It's always wrong, always bad. Good point.
Yeah.
Well, okay, buddy. Good show. I enjoyed it. I appreciate y'all having me. And I'm glad you will. More enthusiasm this time.
Smell that lasagna.
Better
and it's not ready yet. You're going to have to wait before you can even eat it. It's got to cool down, man. And that's like...
Oh, yeah. Torture. Torture or reward, one of the two.
All right.
All right, guys. Appreciate it.